Blog Talk Radio.
Hey everybody, this is Bob Guinea, and you're listening to Star Dish Radio. Let's dish, baby!
Hey, yo, this is Big Bad Brian DiTillo on Star Dish Radio, giving up the dish and claiming myself as one heck of a star.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of Star Dish Radio. Today's May 27, 2010. I'm your host, Joanne. I would love to tell you guys that we are going on a brief summer hiatus after tonight's show. We don't expect to be back up until, let's say, late August, early September. We are relocating from Western New York to South Florida. So, make sure you keep checking the website, Twitter, Facebook fan page, and all that for the updates on the guests. It'll take us a little time to get settled down south. So, like I said, my best guess of when we're going to be back on with fully functioning shows will be late August, early September. So just keep make sure that you check all the social sites and StarDishRadio.com for the word on the next show. Anyway, the call-in number here is 347-945-5423. My guest tonight has made his way through the Valley of Soaps, from beginning with Jake Martin on All My Children, with a brief stint in The Bold and the Beautiful, then dipped into the pool of As the World Turns, but currently has a recurring role of the ever so slightly, unbalanced, shall we call him, Ross Rayburn on One Life to Live. He also is part of a very successful music group called Done Dirt Cheap, a tribute band to the legendary AC/DC, which is pretty cool. So please give Michael Lowry a warm Star Dish welcome.
Hello, hello.
Hi, Michael. How are you?
Are we on? Oh, I had no
idea
we
are.
Oh, excellent. Wow. It's that easy.
That simple. The joy of live radio.
Wow, good, good. You'll have to bear with me. In 1 minute, I'm getting out of a cab, and we'll be all set. Yeah.
Quite all right. Do what you got to do. No biggie.
Right.
I'm just glad that you were able to spend some time with us tonight.
Absolutely. I just came from a pretty cool. It'll be on the right side. A pretty cool photo exhibition. A photographer friend of mine, Peter Hurley, shot the last episode of Lost. On the set in Hawaii, and so he had an exhibition of all these great photos, and at the museum there was also a bunch of artifacts from the show, different props and stuff like that. And hold on 1 second, I got to pay the cab driver.
I had to pay the cab driver.
Sorry about that.
That's all right.
And so it was really neat. That's where I was just coming from. I'm not a Lost fan, so it was all a little bit, no pun intended, lost on me. But there was some, there was a wheel.
I'm glad I'm not alone.
Oh, really? You haven't watched it either?
Yeah, no. I confessed to that the other day. People were like screaming at me because I never was. Like, look, I honestly was lost the very first episode and never turned back.
Yeah,
you know,
after the first season or episode, but I wasn't either, and. But it was really cool to there was a lot of people there that really like were into this. There's a hydrogen bomb there and a blue Volkswagen bus van and a bunch of cool things. And my friend Peter, I'm really proud of him. He shot the cast on the set, and so it was a real neat thing.
Well, you saw it from a different point of view than others who were actually fans of the show. So you had a different perspective on it. So I'm sure that was appreciated.
Yeah. It was really neat. So,
anyways,
I'm here.
Well, I'm glad you're here. Michael, why don't you tell us a little bit about you, where you grew up and how you actually got into acting?
I was born in New York City, and my family, they'll move me early on to the Pacific Northwest and just south of Portland, Oregon.
Okay.
And that's where I grew up and went to school and went to college at Oregon State. And then after I graduated, I moved to L.A. to take a stab at being an actor.
So you went to college for zoology?
Well, actually, I went to school to be, I was in pre-med, and
okay.
I had a biology, zoology major. And zoology is not like I wanted to be a zookeeper. It was zoology,
right.
Study of animals and animal systems. It was kind of, it kind of goes hand in hand with biology, but it was all a pre-med degree. I'm sorry, I'm going on my five-floor walk up here in New York City.
That's so funny.
But once I finished school, I realized I I took a couple of acting classes to kind of take a break from all the science I was taking, and I really got into all that stuff. And so my acting professor said, what are you really doing? Why don't you just take a look at this career, possibly? And so the closest show business town was L.A., so I decided, you know, well, I'll take a break for a year. If it doesn't work out, I'll go to medical school.
Mm-hmm.
And then a year turned into 2 years and 3 years. And, I mean, I'd always loved television. I was a television addict when I was a kid. So,
right.
I mean, I loved the fantasy world that TV offered. And I was really kind of, as much as you could in the 70s and 80s, be like, it's so easy nowadays to be an entertainment fan because there's so many outlets
mm-hmm.
to experience it on the internet, and you know, even Entertainment Tonight and Access Hollywood and all these TMZ, all these things that, you know, really inundate you with show business.
Right.
It didn't exist, you know, when I was growing up. So it was more of a fantasy, you know, what were these actors like that were on these mm-hmm. popular shows that were only on three networks, you know, Charlie
yeah, right, right.
and Fantasy Island and
uh-huh.
So for me, it was a real reach to like be in show business. It wasn't accessible. Like, you know, you see stars now behind the scenes and all this stuff, and it's easy to get online and you know, there's so much information out there. Well, there's nothing like that when I was growing up. So
neither.
Yeah, and so it was harder to kind of wrap your brain around going to Hollywood and being an actor, you know. And
mm-hmm.
but that's what I did, and soap operas were something I grew up with. My mom watched Days of Our Lives, and
mm-hmm.
my grandma watched Days of Our Lives, so I knew, you know, I knew all those characters and stuff, but I never really
right.
thought much about soaps. But, you know, when you're a young actor, those are the things that I was screen testing for, you know, early on, but not getting, frankly. I mean, I kind of fell out for a while. I know this is a long answer to your question, but I'm giving it to you.
Oh, no, just do it. Go ahead. That's what we're all about here. Don't worry about that.
So I screen tested for a lot of different shows. I just wasn't getting the parts on soap operas. So I figured
right.
That wasn't my game. And of course, when all my children came around in 96, I'd done a Daniel Steele thing with Eva LaRue, who was on All My Children at the time, playing Maria. And you know, it's kind of about sometimes you get jobs because of other jobs that you have, and that was really what happened with All My Children. It really was kind of a move to the front of the line deal from another mm-hmm. job, and,
right.
and that was kind of what set me on my soap opera course, really. A good part and a good, great soap opera.
Well, yeah, I mean, Jake Martin, you know, I was talking to Ricky Paul Golden a couple of weeks ago on the show, and we talked about Jake. And how each person that played him brought their own thing to it. And you, I think, were the one who played him the longest out of everybody, and you definitely had it down. And we were so upset when, you know, he was off the air. Then Ricky came on. So I wanted to know, were you asked to come back as Jake when they were doing the recast? Or
it's fair to kind of also look at the history of what happened, which is, you know, I love playing that part, and for me it was close to home because it was a doctor, and
mm-hmm.
and you know, I was kind of essentially being me in a sense. But after a while there, after a couple of years, I was like, you know, I don't have to be the good doctor all the time. You know, I can be a good doctor that does bad things, you know, makes
mm-hmm.
mistakes, you know. And instead, I was always just kind of, oh shucks, unlucky in love. you know, guy that kind of a unit, frankly. And I was just like, you know, I'm not, there's so much more I can bring to this. And at that point in my career at 30 years old, I was like, I'm not going to be stuck doing something that I think that I wish the powers that be would kind of, you know, look at me and go, okay, this guy can do something else. So when I said I wanted to leave, they kind of quickly wrapped up my storyline, and it ended up being a great way to end it, a lot of emotion. But, you know, as far as the baby and all this, I don't know if you remember that storyline.
Yeah.
But it was kind of too late at that point. And I figured, well, I'm not opposed to soaps. I'd rather work on a soap that really wants to use kind of what I have to offer as an actor. And so that's kind of how, you know, that ended there. And so they, you know, they, I know they asked me back pretty shortly thereafter I left. This was about 10 years ago.
Yeah.
And I just wasn't interested. And they hired another guy with three names, J.D. Peck.
Yeah.
And J.D. Peck played Jake for a couple of years. And then after he left, you know, I think what happens sometimes is at ABC and, you know, a lot of the bosses and the people that were around when I was there just weren't there anymore. And I was interested to come back, but I 6 years in television time is an eternity, and so they look at they say who's hot and who's available, and you know, I'm not the hugest soap star in the world, and Ricky Paul was available, and so it wasn't really a thought. I mean, that's just how it goes.
Right.
So, you know, and so now it's interesting because I feel like I kind of started that character. I mean, I know that there was a Joey Martin that was there as a teenager, but Jake is kind of the older adult character started with me and my kind of take on it, and it's gone through three actors. So it's interesting to see people now go, oh, I think you were that guy on All My Children. I think you played Jake, you know, when it used to be, you know. But that's how it goes, you know. You know, it's a business where they want to get the big people in there because it's, you know, the ratings are declining you know, it's a tough deal nowadays.
Yeah, well, My Children was in deep trouble at that point, I believe, and I think
Ricky
was caught off, you know, Guiding Light, and they, you know, had Beth Ellers on there too, so I think they thought that would kind of, you know, spike it a little bit.
And now that character of Jake is him. You know, it's not for me to say it's me, it's what I did. You know, it evolves and it changes with whoever plays it, and that's fair.
Yeah.
You know, absolutely fair.
Yeah.
So,
no. I mean, I loved it as Jake, and I have to say I love Ricky the way he's doing it now too. So like you said, it does move on,
exactly.
You know.
Sure.
So he's all brought your own little thing to it and did.
I mean, I tried to grow a goatee when I tried to grow like facial hair when I was Jake, because I know he does. And I swear I thought they were going to fire me when I showed up with, like, you know, like, no, that is not Jake Martin. Jake Martin has no facial hair. And really it got to the point of my frustration with the character. Like, yeah, he could have facial hair. Really, it's okay to have facial hair.
But, right. Well, you know, back then the Martins were the saintly ones. You know, there was only room in the Martins for one screw up, which was Tad.
Yeah.
You know, so they couldn't. Jake had to be the do-gooder, and you know, he definitely has come a long way because the Jake that Ricky plays is still not the Jake that you played. You know, he's definitely dabbled his hands in the other side. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
so it definitely has stood up.
Yeah. But hey, you know, in the meantime, I've enjoyed the other roles.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Les Sweeney.
I tried actually when I saw that name, Les Sweeney. If you think about it, you know, because the character. Yeah. And I said I really didn't quite get it. I'm like Les. I said, Sweeney's a weird. Can we say Les McNamara? It's Irish. Let's just go that way.
Right.
No, get it, Les Sweeney. You're less than a man. I'm like, oh, thanks for that. And when they referred to Les in the show, they always said his full name, Les Sweeney. You know, it wasn't like Les. It was always, yeah, let's get Les Sweeney. But aside of that, it was, you know, Chris Galvin hired me. I don't know why he hired me, but he saw, I guess, a deranged look in my eye during. I tested for As the World Turns right after All My Children I can't remember what part it is. A part that, I just can't remember the character, but. And I guess he saw a deranged look in my eye and hired me for Les Sweeney a couple of years later. But I really enjoyed being able to, on a soap, to play a character, you know, and really, you know, because those are the things that fans like, I think. I mean, the nice guy is kind of boring after a while, and it was always a thing I railed against doing. So playing Les was great, and it was only supposed to be a week, and it ended up being close to a year of work off and on, and I think was one of the reasons I turned psycho on One Life to Live, because I was a nice guy on that, and I think the writer said, "Oh, I saw you on As the World Turns. You were pretty weird. You're pretty good as a psycho," and that was an option, I guess, that was in their pocket at One Life to make me crazy. But anyway,
you play evil very well.
Well, you know, after playing the nice guy for so long in a soap, you really get angry.
I can imagine.
No, I'm kidding. It's fun to be, you know, actors like to. Be children and have we're allowed to have tantrums in public because we're actors, and so, you know, if you're given that opportunity, you know, why not play for the ball?
Exactly, and you do it very well. We have some people in the chat room who are saying they're waiting for Ross and Blair pairing, but now we've got a little battle because they like Eli and Blair.
Is that right?
Yeah. So where do you stand right now as a character of Ross? I mean. We know that it's recurring, but where do you see anything happening in the immediate future with him? Are they talking to you about anything?
You know, I get mixed signals. I'm curious as to what created the kind of Ross starting out was this kind of lazy surfer dude, kind of a miscreant, but not really that much of a bad guy. And then kind of turned into this charming guy in a, you know, driving a boat and trying to get Blair on his romantic side. So it was a little bit of a Cary Grant character. And then all of a sudden he turns into a raging psycho on a dime.
Yeah.
And
right.
So I didn't quite understand what the strategy was there. That came out of the blue for me. So, you know, I don't know. That's really a question that I don't have the answer to. And you know, they killed me originally,
right?
And they saw some percentage in having me at least be alive for, you know, for future reference,
right?
So I don't know. I think I'm just one of these characters on this that they have in their pocket that they could kind of utilize if the story dictates. But I'm glad that they kept him around, and I believed in the dignity of the character. You kind of have to, as an actor, you can't. Les Sweeney was different; he was kind of despicable. But there is something to Ross that as much as they want to make me crazy, it's about, you believe that this is your child. You know, you kind of, psycho or not, you defend that, and so anyways, he's doing down in Tahiti. I anticipate probably some kind of return. I just don't know what form it's going to take.
I have a few storyline options that were sent to me, because technically Ross is dead. Nobody knows that he's alive other than Todd and Blair, correct? And Taya and Danny.
And, correct. Yes.
Okay.
That is correct. So, Eli knows.
And Eli, right. Okay. So technically that's where he stands. But
yes.
Now, there's rumors going around that Florencia is actually leaving. They have her character dying of a brain tumor on the show, which is kind of bringing her and Blair a little closer together, a little frenemy action going on. But if, in fact, she does leave the show and she dies off, that leaves it open for because Danny hates Todd so much right now, and even though he is her biological father, there's several references all the time to Ross being her real father. So there's definitely room for them to bring him back in if Florencia, not even if Florencia doesn't leave, if Ross got word of her being ill and back and forth. So there's plenty of things that can be done. It would be a nice rivalry with Todd. It says here, they're telling me that they made you look evil to make Todd look good, which didn't work.
No.
So, that just didn't work.
Fans aren't, you know, I agree.
Yeah, that just didn't work. So they don't know if they want to make Todd just evil or dumb, and really it's just, you know, okay.
It's funny. It's funny. I have to make a point about that. When we were shooting the scene where I take over and go psycho, I grab the gun and I knock a cop out, and I'm taking the children as hostage, and I'm pleading my case as a father to Taya and Todd, who I've locked in a jail cell. And I'm supposed to look crazy, but the character, God, I feel like an idiot right now. The actor that plays Todd.
Trevor.
Trevor, I'm sorry. Trevor
right.
says to me.
Okay.
Trevor says to no one in particular. He goes, Ross is the most empathetic character here. I feel bad for Ross. Is that what we're supposed to do? It's like, I'm not sure this is what we're supposed to be doing here, but I feel bad for this guy, you know? So it's
right.
but anyways, I mean, yeah, I think that there's certainly a potential if she's got a disease or if she leaves. I'm not sure she wants to leave, but.
Right.
But,
well, those are the internet rumors that are going around, and with her storyline being what it is, so people are kind of speculating because she's supposedly got an incurable brain tumor, and Blair kind of convinced her to go for radiation, and she's fighting very hard now to keep Todd out of jail so he could be
Todd
a father to Danny.
You're gonna have to brush me up on this.
Okay. Todd was accused of pushing Marty Saybrook down a flight of stairs, which caused her to lose her unborn child. So he's being charged with attempted murder.
When did he do
and,
that?
It was a couple weeks ago that it aired. Yeah.
Okay.
But it really wasn't him, of course. We know that. That's just not going to happen.
Oh,
but so no.
Something?
No, it was Star's boyfriend's partner, lab partner or something. She's trying to break up Star and Cole, so she knows how much Star and Cole kind of fight about, you know, believing Todd or not believing Todd, the animosity between them. So she thought it would be a good way to get in between the kids and break up, you know, the single parents and accuse Todd. So that put a wedge between Star and Cole. So it just makes Todd look guilty because there was a huge argument, and he told her that he wanted her and her kids and whatever out of Landia. So, of course, he's the likely suspect. So, yeah, so all of a sudden now he's on trial and he's getting ready to go to trial. So because of that, Taya is fighting so hard for him to get out of this so he can be a father to Danielle in case she dies. So, again.
So she really just, Ross is just crap on the bottom of her shoe. She doesn't see any worthiness in Ross as being a father.
She no, it hasn't been mentioned, but Danny's the one who mentions him. So he is still mentioned,
right.
You know, and but not by her. She really thinks that Todd can be a father, and we all know that's not true. But I think that most people felt the empathy for your character because Todd has proven himself to be an evil bastard over all the years. You know, they kind of just threw that on you like that.
Right.
So you don't have time to be evil yet. You know, you
right.
do look like
right.
the sympathetic father, you know, like I'm
right.
pleading my case. I really want to be with my kids. So I could definitely see that. But you do play unhinged very well.
Well, I've been in show business for 20 years. It can create this, it makes a guy crazy. You don't know what
right.
I'm like.
Right?
No, that's the best. I couldn't have done this 15 years ago. I would have tried to be crazy, but now I'm actually crazy. No, I'm certifiably crazy.
We got a Diane is in the chat room, and she was actually part of helping Giovanni Vitacolonna set up the PAWS event at Prohibition.
Yeah.
So she wanted to say thank you for attending.
Absolutely. It was a great time.
Yeah, it was. It was just so, it went by very fast. I mean, I didn't even really get a chance to talk to you that much, but,
right.
You know, before I knew it, you were out the door. But I want to touch on this band that you're in because I
sure.
watched the videos. Tell me about how that started and why ACDC?
Well, I'll tell you, these two good questions. Why AC/DC? Well, when I was on all my children, I kind of knew how to play guitar a little bit. I bought a cheap guitar a couple years before that, but I didn't really practice much. And when I got my dressing room with all my children, there was this little amplifier in there. And and then Walt Willey had this black Stratocaster he would play for soap events, and he never used it. It was sitting and collecting dust. Walt Willey played McGuff Jackson on all my children. And I would be collecting dust in his dressing room. I said, "Walt, I'll buy that off you." And so I would practice in my room, you know, waiting to go up on set, guitar. And I would, there was all I had really that I liked to listen to was AC/DC. So I would just play these AC/DC songs. And those were the first songs I learned. And I got to really love the music, the early music from the 70s, you know, Highway to Hell and TNT. And I practiced more over the years. And then about 4 years ago, I was back in New York, and I got to know my girlfriend at the time worked as a dresser on Broadway, and I got to know a lot of the Broadway community and really got to respect the performers, and because I never really got into the theater and stuff when I lived here on all my children. So I got to really know people and see a lot of theater, and I thought about and I, what I really liked about the theater community here, they put up a lot of cabarets and reviews and benefits for like Equity Fights AIDS or whatever charity of their choice. And they would use the talents of people on Broadway to do whatever they wanted. And so I thought, I want to create a show that it's like a rockers, you know, get some of the people that I know from Broadway hits like Aida and Grease and different musicals be the lead singer for like Back in Black in a song of AC/DC, and then have somebody else come in and sing another song. So it would be a benefit. I think it was for at the time, the 9/11 and Widows and Children Foundation through the New York City Policeman's Benevolent Association, which I'd done some charity work for. So we had in 2006 on September 11th, we had an AC/DC, and it was like I played guitar and a few friends of mine played the other instruments, and people would exchange the singing roles, and it went off really well, and we did another one the next summer in 2007, and it went well, but we all as the guys in the band like really liked playing the music, and so we decided to just become a band, and that's really kind of what it's distilled down to now is a cover band, and we just like to rock, and I've got a bunch of great musicians. My drummer, Jonathan Dinklage, is a virtuoso violinist. He plays first chair violin. He was in Shrek and been a musical director for Mary J. Blige. Mark Vandeplore, bass player, is a Broadway pit musician. Michael Ahrens is playing lead guitar in American Idiot, which is on Broadway right now, an amazing guitarist. And Sean Jeunesse, our lead singer, is just insane. I don't know how he sings like he does and drinks as much as he does. It's amazing that he can actually do both. And then there's me that keeps it all together. So I've just had a ball with it. It's been kind of my labor of love. And last year we've really turned it up. And we're playing again June 26th at the Mean Fiddler in Midtown. So.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Now, is there an official website? Because when I looked it up, I found one, but my security settings on the computer wouldn't let me go to it. So I don't know what that meant.
It's www.dundirt.com. The band's name is Dun Dirt Cheap. And Dun Dirt, DONEDIRT.com is the website. And and then we also have a Facebook page, which actually is a little bit more complete than the website, just because it's easier to put stuff up on the Facebook page. And the Facebook page is Dun Dirt Cheap. It's like the group. Become a fan. And you know, if you don't, the thing is about what AC/DC, it's good, hard, barroom rock and roll, and it may not be your taste of music, but a lot of people that come as a courtesy to stay for a couple songs, stay the whole show, and have a great time because the performers in my band are really good, and it's a real fun night, And so I urge anybody to come in and see us. It's been a lot of fun.
Absolutely. They we have some people in the chat room from New York, and they're saying she's saying she's going to have to catch a show now. I like AC/DC. I mean, I grew up in that time too, so it's nice listening to it. You know, I think if you grew up in the 80s, you have that appreciation of them. You know, you just do. It's just one of those bands that you do. And whether you really are into heavy metal or not, you know, that's just one of the bands that you do. And I love the fact that they carry on to generations. I mean, I have a 17-year-old nephew that worships them, you know, and my 9-year-old worships them, you know. I mean, I love that it spans, you know.
And that's you hit it right on the head, because it's they transcend generations. And I'm sure, I mean, it's funny. I was going up the elevator a couple of weeks ago, and I had an AC/DC shirt on, and this guy looked at me and he goes, "Aren't you a little old to be wearing an AC/DC shirt?" And I said, "Actually, I'm a little young to be wearing it, frankly, when they were like huge." He didn't quite understand it, to your point of like it does transcend generations, and it's fun, and you know, it's not like we're up there, you know, crazed and, you know, falling on each other, and we have a real fun group of guys that play the music. Sean, our lead singer, is between songs, he's real funny and engaging, and it's a real fun time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, my son is not, my little one is 9, and he says, "Wow, they had this back in your day, Ma?" I was like, "Yeah, back in my day."
Yeah.
Well, he's 40. Yeah, back in my
before
day.
Before our day. Frankly,
yeah, exactly. Before our day. You're absolutely right about that. Now, I have to say, whenever I have a guest on, I always do a YouTube search just to see past interviews and, you know, see if there's anything out there, any kind of dirt I can get on. Now, what I find interesting when I do a YouTube search on Michael Lowry, a slew of videos come up, and they're all titled Michael Lowry Shirtless, Michael Lowry Shirtless with Shirt Open. Michael Lowry shirtless. And I was like, "You've got to be kidding me." There's like a gazillion of them review just shirtless. And then the one that I really loved was this little thing that you did for Cartoon Network.
Starsky and Hutch. It's
hysterical.
To this day, it's one of my proudest achievements. And that may be a sad statement of what I think are my proudest achievements are. But we did that about 10 years ago for the Cartoon Network. Starsky and Hutch is my all-time favorite show. In fact, in many ways, inspired me to be an actor. And I thought I was David Starsky when I was in high school, grade school. Thank you for bringing that up. I at Starsky and Hutch searched for their crime-fighting mentor, who is Hong Kong Phooey, the crime-fighting dog. And, you know, mayhem ensues. My friend Austin, a close friend of mine, who's English, who's exactly my age. He's blonde. I'm dark-haired, and he's in London. At Starsky and Hutch in the 70s and 80s was much bigger than it was in the United States. And so I met him 10 or 15 years ago in L.A., and he's a commercial director, very successful. Mm-hmm. And he got this contract to do these commercials for TNT to support the Cartoon Network. And they would break what you saw on YouTube, they would break that up and show it in different, you know, because it was like a 5-minute thing what you saw, but they would show pieces of it to support, you know, the Cartoon Network. But it just, it was a joy. They had all the great costumes, and it was a lot of fun.
Well, Di in the chat room wants to know what you're doing on your downtime until Ross comes back.
Well, the band occupies, I'm the manager of the band, and nothing happens unless I do pick up the phone and do something. And so really that occupies a lot of time. So we've got, like I said, a couple shows coming up. What else am I doing? I was maybe gonna go to LA for a couple of weeks and visit my family and stuff, but that's about it. I mean, I've been working a little bit. I went to South Africa last month to do a Cymbalta commercial, depression medication, and then I did an episode of Law and Order, which is just on recently.
You did. Yes, it was out on May 10th, and I think it's a sin that show is off the air. So I had
I have to say that when I did it in March, it was nobody knew at the time that I mean, nobody knew that it was going to be canceled. I think it might have come out of nowhere, but I got to tell you, I was happy to have done that show. I feel like the only actor in New York to have never worked on that show up until that point.
Everybody's been on that show.
Absolutely, and so I was lucky to get it in under the wire.
Yeah.
So it was a little part, but it was still fun to be on the set, and you know.
Oh well, you know, Di, is she saying in the she missed it. Trust me, they will be repeating that Law and Order episode. I can guarantee you that because they ended it so abruptly. The last episode that they had was not supposed to be the last episode. They just ended it, and that was the end of it. Yeah, it wasn't planned to be the last episode, so they'll be repeating them because they don't have anything to fill that time slot yet. So
yeah.
They'll be repeating it.
They'll definitely. In fact, I think they even repeated my episode. They'll show it, and then they'll air it again on Saturday, on the Saturday after. It's sad, really, for New York because, you know, you have, which we really haven't discussed either, which is this the dying of the soap opera genre and business in New York. The last thing they need is to lose another television show. And, you know, they lose Law & Order New York, but they gain Law & Order L.A. And I always hate to see business keep going out west because I think New York is a great, invigorating town for an actor to be in and try and make a living. But there's, you know, without the soaps, you know, As the World Turns is now gone, Guiding Light's gone. All My Children's gone, in essence, from New York. There's very little work for actors. It's tough.
What did you think about that when they were moving when they decided to move All My Children? I mean, you hadn't been on it, but
I would be, you know, what my first thought was that it's a lesson in that whatever decisions come down hard and fast without anybody knowing it. In terms of, you know, I worry that there's going to be a cancellation and nobody's going to see it coming.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what that was, that the lesson of that, because nobody saw that. That came out of freaking left field, you know, over moved to L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe some people were happy about that. I don't know. Most people weren't. But, that you know, but there was just no indication of that. And,
right.
You know, my concern is that, you know, if there's, you know, I just heard tonight that they're losing SoapNet.
Yes, they canceled SoapNet.
And you know, I don't know if there's any rumblings of that, but I didn't know anything about that. So it's just like, what's scary about that move, which to me, you know, I'm not obviously in the know and in the upper echelons of how business is conducted at ABC Daytime, but to me it's a dubious move. I don't know what it really saves, and frankly, you're talking about three shows with exactly the same ratings. I'm worried about the Daytime. I'm worried about One Life to Live. They say there's a few years left on that show, but who knows? You know, when all of a sudden you're told you're moving to L.A. for, you know, and you don't get any warning, it doesn't make you feel confident about going to work whatever soap you're working on. And then As the World Turns, at least got some notice, but. You know, it's a dying television genre, unfortunately. There's really, when you get down to the 1.6 and 1.7 Nielsen numbers, you can't compete. You know, you can stick a talk show in there for those numbers, and so it's scary. It's unfortunate. You know.
It is. The news came out yesterday about SoapNet, and everybody went absolutely shit crazy over it, and you know, for the fact that they're replacing it with a copycat of Nick Jr., but as Disney Jr.
Really?
You know, yeah, and it's like, really? You know, all those little two to 7-year-old insomniacs got their 24 hours of cartoons.
Right. Exactly. Well,
you know, it's like, okay.
Yeah, it's indicative of how business will be conducted down the road, and you know, it's too bad because there was a time where, you know, as an actor certainly, where you were confident in the, you know, if you're working in prime time, you know the deal. You know, you go out for pilots and you get a pilot or whatever. You know that your series, if you're lucky, will last 2 years. Or if you get a pilot, you're lucky if it goes for a season. You know, if you're in soap operas, that it's a given. You may not be paid, you know, the huge amount of money as a primetime star, but
right.
you're going to have job security, and that's all gone, you know?
Yeah.
If I go back to work on One Life to Live, I'm not confident that that job will be around, you know, indefinitely. I mean, you never could,
right.
as an actor, you're stupid to think that you're going to be around forever. I mean,
you can find
other reasons, but to have your, to be worried about the existence of your show and to be on a soap, that is just unprecedented. But now it is the precedent, you know, it's with all the shows that have disappeared. And I don't know. I hope there's a few left before long.
I hope so, too. You know, I think that if SoapNet would have stuck to its guns the way it originally came out, where it aired just, you know, the same-day soaps with the classic soaps, and I think it would have did just well, but they decided that they wanted to go into some direction of Lifetime, you know, showing movies of the week and Gilmore Girls, that kind of stuff, and
yeah.
it turned people off when they started doing that, and now just this,
yeah.
you know, not for nothing, children watch too much TV as it is, and if you got a kid that's going to stay up 24 hours to watch Disney Junior, then you got some major issues in your house.
Right, and it's not a vote of confidence for your daytime television that you're producing.
Exactly.
Right.
And he claims that, you know, they're totally committed. Brian Franz put out a statement that they're totally committed to ABC daytime. And a lot of us found it odd that the New York Times printed an article about it yesterday, but just so happened to leave One Life to Live out of the equation and only mentioned All My Children in General Hospital. And, you know, of course, everybody jumped on that bandwagon and, you know, see, it's going to be gone. But then, of course, you know, Damage Control came in and said it was a typo and da-da-da-da. But I don't know. I never jumped on that bandwagon that One Life was going to be one of these casualties, and I really hate to do it, but I don't really see it, you know, any I don't see it looking up or looking good,
no,
period.
I don't, and I don't disagree with you, and I hate to feel that way. I like to feel confident because, you know, I've done a lot of different things in show business, but soap operas have been my bread and butter, and I've
mm-hmm.
always kind of depended on that. So it's hard
yeah.
when your career is that component is in jeopardy. You know, you start
mm-hmm.
going, oh man.
Maybe I should have finished medical school.
Yeah.
Well. Have you given any thought to any of these or checked out any of these the new craze seems to be the soaps on the internet. There's quite a few indie soaps that are out there put up on the internet. I know that one is coming out called The Bay with a lot of daytime vets, and there's quite a few of them that I don't know personally how the money is made off of it, but they're all
you're very astute. You hit the nail on the head in every point you're making. I mean, those are great, and it's great there's the internet, which is the culprit in many ways to the demise of what we're talking about, soap operas,
mm-hmm.
the genre of daytime. You know, the solution is to also be the internet, but the problem is and everybody's willing to do it. Listen, if somebody called me up and said, I want you to act doing this, I'd like to act. I'd love to do it. But you got to monetize it. It's got to be a career for me. And,
yeah, right.
You know, that's still in its infancy. And
yeah.
You know, unless you can afford to work for free for the next 10 or 15 years until you figure out how to make money off of it, right. That is just going to be kind of like a pirate radio thing and it'll keep your popular faces out there doing stuff, but it, you know, I've seen a few things and it's weird. It's just, you know, I'm a traditionalist. I want to see the hour serial, you know. I want to see a 10-minute blurb that's kind of obscure, and I haven't seen them all, so I guess it's not fair to say that all of them are like that, but it's just
right.
You know, when you don't have the money and to pay people, your production quality is different. So it's certainly, you know, soap operas when they started were laughable too. You know,
right.
straight out of radio. So it's not fair to like level that criticism and say it's not worthy. But
right.
you know, how long is it going to take to for actors and people to look at it and go, yeah, that's a legitimate career alternative.
I think that it's more on the rise now, and I think that they're probably, I would have to imagine that they're figuring out ways to pay people to do it because there are so many of them that have popped out. I mean, I know Tristan Rogers is involved with a few of them. A lot of the cast of Guiding Light, when Guiding Light went under, Crystal Chappelle started one that Gina Tognoni's on, and now this one, The Bay, it's got John Callahan and Sandra Dee Robinson, Mary Beth Evans. So, I would imagine that all of these actors can't just be doing this, you know, for the giggles of it.
I will say that they probably, I hate to disagree, but they probably are. knowing, you know, having worked with everyone and wanting the desire of those people in particular who are huge soap opera daytime veterans, wanting to feeling the demise of the traditional soap opera and wanting to keep some of it alive in some other medium, I think that that people are probably willing to throw in their talent and their image for next to nothing.
Yeah.
And because I don't know how I've looked into a little bit, and I'm not. Nobody's getting paid. The money's not flowing, but that's okay. I think it's great.
Yeah.
Ken Schreiner's a good friend of mine. I worked with him on As the World Turns, and he's doing Martha Burns' thing, and excited to do it. And like I said, I'd be happy to do it too, just to be part of the party.
Right.
But after a while, there's got to be, you know, you've got to
some kind of money somewhere. Right.
You know.
Yeah. Yeah. No, you're right about that. With all that being said, now, I mean, do you wish that you would have gone further in college?
I don't regret at all. In fact, I left college exactly 20 years ago. I graduated from Oregon State in 1990,
right.
May or June of 1990. And I have a lot of friends that, most of my non-show business friends that work pre-med with me that are doctors and are very successful, and lawyers and salespeople, people that are really now in their 40s that are really, their careers are hitting kind of full swing. Their debts are paid off, and they've got some experience behind them, and they all say the same thing. They look at me and they say, you know, I they feel like they've sacrificed their 20s and 30s for that end. And although they're happy and successful, you know, they feel like they've lost some years in terms of the best years, the younger years, to kind of play. And I chose to play in my younger years and take a risk. And it was never, it's not all vacation, but I've had a great time in show business. I've been very fortunate, and
right.
To make that decision to not continue with school at that time, I think it's the best decision a young person can make. You know, not 20 years, maybe. I'd say I set a rule for myself. I said I'll do this for 5 years. If at 28 I haven't really seen some signs of success, I will go back to school. And then I had seen some, not enough. I mean, I wanted to be a huge star in my mid-20s. I wasn't, but it was enough for me to keep going. So I don't regret continuing my education, because I don't think I think I would look back and regret if I was a doctor now at 42 and say, you know, boy, I had an opportunity at that time, or I wish I would have stuck it out. Because there was times where I'm like, you know, after my fourth screen test of soap operas or you know, pilot that failed on prime time, that maybe this isn't the right choice. You know, maybe the universe is telling me, you know, to go back to school. And I'm glad I stuck with it. And you know, this is also the it's funny, it's not funny, but it's sobering with what's happened, you know, in our economy and really these unprecedented economic times. How many people my age are going back to school and are not afraid to educate themselves? And I mean, you look at the applications for grad schools around the country; they're through the roof. And it's I'm I'm thankful that I did go to college and did well. You know, I studied
mm-hmm.
hard and did well. And those that stuff sticks to you like a federal debt. I mean, in a good way. You know, your good grades stay with you your whole life. So
yeah.
that's always there for me.
Right.
I can fall back if I want, in some sense, to go back to school. And I have. I've experimented with different things. As I've gotten older, show business is not the be-all, end-all. I've looked into other things, and just the band stuff, doing that has been a lot of work and been, you know, productive and exhilarating for me in ways that show business can't give me because I have some control.
Right.
So that's education's always there, and I think at an older age you are going to it from a more honest point of I want to do this, you know,
mm-hmm.
rather than I'm leaving college and I'm 22 and I have to be a grad student. I've got to go down.
Exactly. Yeah, I think there's too much pressure on kids to make
yeah.
them go to college directly after school. I tell my son he doesn't have to. I have a 17-and-a-half-year-old. He's going to graduate next year. There's no pressure. It's going to be there.
Yeah,
not going anywhere.
World.
That's what I said. You know, go join the Navy or something. Go
yeah.
backpack. Go do
yeah.
something.
Yeah.
Let's get into a little fun stuff with you. Let me
sure.
ask you a couple fun questions. What was the craziest fan experience you ever had?
The craziest fan experience, that's an easy question. I generally labor over questions, but that's a no-brainer. The craziest fan experience I ever had, I admit, I was a personal appearance whore when I was on All My Children.
Uh-huh.
And every weekend I was off to, I think I visited almost every state in the country, the Target, the Sears, the mattress store, whatever. Because I loved it. It was, you know, the money was good, and
mm-hmm.
I love traveling. I love seeing as many different things, and that's one thing I was on somebody else's dime. I got to go to some state I would never go to in my entire life. I never gone.
Right.
No offense to people in South Dakota, I'd never go there. But I went there because of a Sears opening and All My Children, you know,
right.
somewhere in Mississippi or Iowa or this and that. And I jumped on it. And
right.
one appearance I did in the late 90s, they opened an enormous amount of Target stores around the country. And at Soap Star, they would do it like this. It would be a grand opening, and there to sign autographs, there would be a Soap Star next to an athlete of the town. Like if you were in Dallas, I would be there, and right next to me would be like Tony Dorsett, you know, who was
right.
the Dallas Cowboys
Dallas
running back
Cowboy.
In the 70s
uh-huh.
and 80s. You know, the local hero, which I always found amusing because these are like my heroes as a child. I'd be like, holy, holy crap, Roger Craig of the San Francisco 49ers. And I'm like, and there's a longer line for me than him. You know,
right.
I just thought that I thought there was just horrible injustice to that. And so anyways, I was at that, I don't know if it was a Sears or something, and I don't know where, I can't remember where it was, but there was a, you would set up on it, usually sometimes they'd have like a card table and a stack of headshots and 400 Sharpies, and you'd just start signing.
Mm-hmm.
And to, you know, if the line was really, really long, I'd never like to, like, people would come back and take pictures because it would just take too long.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went to this one place and they had a huge stage up. And so I had to step up. It was like 4 feet off the ground. It was a really long line. And so I told the security guard, I said, absolutely nobody can come back and take pictures. It's just, first of all, it's dangerous
mm-hmm.
and it's going to take forever. It's just going to take forever. No offense, but let's, and as soon as you say yes to one person,
you got to do it to everybody.
You got to do it to everybody. Or you really, you'll have a fist fight in the crowd.
Oh, yeah.
And so so we were doing pretty well with this policy until about an hour into it, this really attractive young lady looked at me with her doe eyes and said, you know, Michael, could you take a picture of me? I said, you know what? Okay, I'll make an exception. She goes, my aunt's with me, and she would love to take a picture. And I said, okay. And she said, Aunt Mabel, come up. And this older lady came up, and she was a heavier lady, and
mm-hmm.
she a little precarious to get her up on the stage.
Oh, God.
And she got up next to me, and I said, be careful, there's not a railing there. And right as I said that, she stepped off and was in midair and landed like on, like she was completely parallel with the ground. She hit the floor, and like the whole building shook. And like, I'm not kidding, she couldn't brace herself at all. She just literally hit the, like, flat on her side and snapped her right arm, like snapped it.
And, oh, my God.
Yeah. And I looked in, I said, I didn't know it at the time. I said, are you okay? Are you okay? And she turned up and she said, I think I broke my arm. And she lifted it up, and it was at a right angle. I mean, it was.
Oh, my God.
Severely broken. And I was like, and the whole crowd was going nuts. It was, and so I said, call 911. Call 911. Stop the appearance. And so I jumped down there. And, you know, I don't know what to do. And somebody said, Dr. Jake, do something. And at that moment, you're like, guys, I'm not a doctor. I can't attend to this woman. And it was really, it was a moment where it's like, I'm actually not a doctor, people. And I can't provide her the comfort that she needs right now. I could say, are you okay? And this and that. But so it was a really bizarre situation. And she really was a trooper. She said, oh, I broke it 4 times before. I'll be fine. So she's really just laying there, and the paramedics came in, and we got her on the stretcher, and I mean, literally took about an hour, and they started wheeling her away, and she started screaming profanities. She goes, stop, stop, stop. Dr. Jake, get over here. I want a picture. So they're strapped to the gurney. They took a picture with a thumbs up, and then they wheeled her away.
That's my God. Oh, my God. God, forgive me for laughing, but really?
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That is, that's probably the best one I've heard so far.
Well, the best one that I've heard that didn't happen to me, but happened to Michael Knight. I have to say, it'll take 2 minutes, but it's the best appearance story I've ever heard. It was back in the
early 80s. Oh, God, tell me.
Back, it was like in 1980, 81. Because I think I had just told him this story about the fractured radius of this older lady, and he's like, that's a great story, I've got one better. Because I was at an auto show in 1980, and there was this kind of sleazy promoter that was promoting this huge, like, you know, 15,000 people at this crazy auto show in Pomona, California, and Michael Knight of All My Children was going to be there, and he's like, yeah, I want you to get on stage, and I'm gonna MC it, and we're gonna pretend like we're friends, and I'm gonna you know, warm up the audience, and then when I say my best friend Michael Knight's coming out, you're gonna come out, and I'm gonna release all these 10,000 orange balloons, and they're gonna be floating down, and it's gonna be awesome. And he's like, all right, man, you know, that sounds fine, whatever. And so. Sure enough, that's what he does. He's setting it up, and he's like, you know, there's, and it was a huge crowd, like 10,000 people. I mean, Michael even said, you know, it was really unusual. They got a lot of people back in the day when All My Children was gigantic, because this crowd was enormous. It was beyond anything he'd ever had an appearance.
Mm-hmm.
And so the guy's making, he's like, you know, warming him up. He says, and now, ladies and gentlemen, what you've all been waiting for, Michael Knight. And Michael runs out. The balloons come out on cue. And 10,000 people are out there, and nobody makes a peep. And he said it was so quiet, he could hear the balloons floating through the air and bouncing on his head. You know,
oh, boom, my God. Boom, boom.
And there's a stack of like 700 headshots there, 10 Sharpie pens. And all of a sudden, he hears out of the, like, the middle of the audience, where's the car? They thought they were there to see Michael Knight, David Hasselhoff, Knight Rider. And they get a soap opera guy that they don't recognize as David Hasselhoff.
Oh, my God.
He sat down, and not one person came up. He sat there with next to 700 headshots and 10 Sharpies and watched 10,000 people just slowly mill away from him.
Oh, my God. That poor Michael. Oh, my God.
Yeah.
And then years later, he marries David Hasselhoff's ex-wife. Yeah, exactly. I'm really Michael Knight. I'm the real Michael Knight now.
Right, exactly. It's a sick, sick small circle in show business.
Holy cow.
But the visual of the balloons coming down and hitting him in the head when people are staring at him, like, I think we were late to the stage that day. We were both laughing so hard, you know.
Oh, my God. And he is such a doll, Michael. Do you still keep in touch with him?
I do. And one of the best experiences is working with him on that show. I really, as an actor, we really worked well together as brothers. And I really enjoyed working with him. He's crazy.
I've had the pleasure of meeting him a few times. Last year I went on that, there was a Rock the Soap cruise that I went on, that Bob Guinea put on. So I got to hang out with him there, and he's been on the show several times. He's a sweetheart. He's fun to hang out with, good at the bar, always good for a few drinks, you know, but he's definitely a character.
Humor. And he and I would also do, we would do comedy clubs and stuff, kind of Q&A things around locally, and just a real cut up on stage too. Really, really enjoys, you know, as long as he's been on soaps, he really works to find the meaning in a scene. And there's a few people I work with that just kind of phone it in, and then there's people like Michael Knight and Marcy Walker who literally sit down and rewrite the scene because it doesn't, and I learn a lot from them, and I really respect it because you get, after so many years, you get thrown the same stuff to be proactive with it like they are. I was blessed to start working with those people.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Well, do you stay in touch with Marcy Walker? I mean, I know she's down in North Carolina, I think it is, running the ministry.
Last I saw Marcy was at her wedding 10 years ago, and that is, she just dropped out of the picture. I haven't seen her from her since, so I hear she's doing really well.
Yeah, well, I know she does have a Facebook, and she does kind of...
she does?
Yeah, she does. She does have a Facebook, but I think she kind of definitely shies away from any kind of soap stuff that comes around. We were all wondering about her, and... when they recast Eliza. So I'll have to ask you, being that you worked with the original, what do you think about that? Jamie Luner as Liza. I mean, Jamie Luner is a talented actress, but I have to say it because I can. It just never worked for me.
Well, and it's the same kind of story with whenever you recast. It's like, you know, you get... I'm not a very good attendee of the shows I worked on if I'm not working on them anymore. I haven't seen, and I know her, I like her, Jamie Luner as an actress, so it's, you know, the thing is, it's like, initially, it's always a rough deal, and if you've not been fired from people not liking you from being recast, you start to develop, you know, you're there, and people start to like you, and new fans know that's the only, you know, people think, you know, Ricky Paul Gold is the only Jake that's ever been there, you know, so they like him for what he brings to it, and I'm sure with Jamie Luner, the same thing. So I haven't seen her portrayal of Liza. I just know that Marcy Walker, she working with an actress, again, that when you're given kind of the same material with different masks, year in and year out, but to put the kind of work and the emotional investment day in and day out, it can be exhausting. And they generally work the women a lot harder in that department than the men. And to watch her just put in that kind of emotional, honest work for a character. She started even before she's on Santa Barbara, she was Liza on All My Children.
Right.
And so. At heart, that's Marcy Walker's character. So I just know her, and I'm obviously intimately working with her with that character. And I'm not sure Jake and Liza ever worked as a couple. It was you know, just kind of my segue into the show.
Yeah.
But
right.
You know, again, always always a, you know, a blessing to work with somebody that's that engaged. You know, you couldn't help but be a better actor working with those kind of people. So.
Mm-hmm. In the chat room, they're asking me, okay, I got a couple questions here about, since we were talking about appearances, will you be making an appearance at the One Life to Live fan club luncheon this October?
Well, so
fan club party, sorry.
Yeah, I mean, I kind of feel like I want to be part of the show to go to a fan club luncheon. I'm not one of those that shows up at the All My Children fan club luncheon because I haven't
been on
that. Yeah,
because you played
so,
Jake, right?
Yeah, I mean, and you know, even if there wasn't a guy playing Jake there, I want to be part of a show to you know, go to an event. And so, you know, if I'm on the show, absolutely, I will be there.
Then there's another question. You're supposed to be doing a skit during the show for, wait, I got to go back up. Gotham Comedy Club appearance, the Richie Burns show.
Richie Burns show, yeah, that's going to be a lot of fun. And, you know, this just kind of came over the wire for me. So I think it's for Comedy Cures. Is that the charity?
Comedy Cures Foundation, yes.
Yes. And that's going to be a lot of fun. I love doing comedy. And I know Richie through a comedy manager who booked me and Michael Knight and Mark Consuelos at the comedy clubs years ago. And so
okay.
I can't remember again, I just got this. I don't know what. Where is it? The comedy store?
Let's see. I should put the link in the chat room. No. It's in here. Wait, she's got the link in the chat room.
My job.
It's that's what your fans are for. Trust me, they know more than you think. They probably know more than you do.
They do. They absolutely do. I can attest to that.
This is at Gotham Comedy Club.
That's it. Yeah.
208 West 23rd Street. And it's Wednesday, June 16th from 7 to 8:30 p.m.
Yeah.
$20 tickets, 2-drink minimum. Call for reservations ASAP, 212-367-9000.
Oh, thank you for that very much. I appreciate it. And I'm really stoked to do this. It's going to be, you know, the sketch comedy thing is always a lot of fun, and there's always improv and so I'm really looking forward to working with Richie on that. We're doing a funny skit about two astronauts showing up on a planet. It's funny. It should be a great time. So hopefully get a lot of folks down there.
Wonderful. Well, I just looked on their Facebook page that Tanya Walker put that she might be stopping by.
Oh,
so that's pretty cool.
Good. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. Well, now, what? As far as social networking, where are you in this world? Are you Twitter? Are you Facebook?
Well, I've got the Facebook, and are you still there?
I'm here.
Okay, I just want my phone just lit up, and I've got this iPhone here. If I touch it,
okay.
I got the Facebook, and like I said, the band's got the Facebook under cheap, so that's a good way. And you know, my Facebook is, I know a lot of actors have it. I mean, I start off, it was more of my personal Facebook with my personal friends.
Right, so there's no fan page yet, in other words.
To answer your question, I'm not good with the whole social networking thing. So I've not been that diligent about setting up a fan page. I do have kind of my personal Facebook page. There's personal stuff on there that, you know.
Right.
But I'm not Mr. Update every 10 minutes, and so a lot of the fans can go to that.
Right.
And mainly I have it for band updates and occasional thoughts. I've learned about, of course, I've known about the tweeting for since it's been going, but my friend Lisa Lo Cicero, who's on General Hospital, she said, you need to do this, Michael. You need to be on the twitting or the tweeting. And I went out to lunch there the other day, and she took a picture and put it on. She goes, you can reach your fans that way. It's very easy. You need to be a good, you know, a good actor and do this. So I'm looking to figure that one out.
Lisa is a queen Twitterer. She definitely is.
She was.
She's a queen Twitterer.
Is she really?
I follow her. Yes, she is. I do. I follow her. She's been on the show a couple times also, and she's very in tune with her fans, and she responds to as many as she can. She's very good about it. You know, some actors who just don't respond at all, you know, they let people follow them, and they put up their little status updates and what they're doing or whatever, and they just don't respond, which will gain you, you know, a lot of... You know what, though? What I have to say, in all honesty, and I tell people on the show all the time as far as fans go, you can't expect everyone to respond to you because you got to imagine the amount of tweets that people get a day. Yeah. Lisa has so many followers, it's ridiculous. I mean, to even assume that she'll see the Twitter tweet,
right,
whatever, from you is a given, you know what I mean? Let me
yeah.
see. I'm going to tell you right now how many people follow her. But
she followed me like 10, 11,000 people.
I'll tell you right now. Where are you, Lisa? Where'd you go? But Brandon Barash is another one. He's got a gazillion followers, and to see if he'll retweet you, I mean, you almost feel like a stalker if you keep retweeting them, like, just to get a response, you know? So it's like, really? Okay, she's got 11,946
yeah.
followers.
Well, in a month, that's increased by, like, 1,000.
Yeah, and she's following 46 people, and she's tweeted 1,030 times.
Oh, my God.
That's what it shows you. Her last tweet was... today's Wednesday, right? No, yesterday was, the song you wanted Olivia to sing is Mambo Italiano, the Clooney version, thoughts, feelings. So she asks opinions. So, you know, she's very good with her fans via Twitter.
Yeah.
And so it's a good way to stay in touch.
She, Lisa's a dear friend of mine. And I we have this thing where we go out to lunch in Silver Lake once every 3 or 4 months when I'm in town, and this has been a routine for 3 or 4 years now. And we were kind of going through a little bit of the unemployed down and outs several years ago, and it's really been great to see her. I think she had just been on One Life to Live, actually, and they kind of unceremoniously let her go, and
mm-hmm.
and just kind of going through the, you know, what actors go through when they're unemployed. They want to end their lives, and life isn't worth living, and blah, blah, blah. And the different, you know, she screen tested for a few different things here and there and wasn't getting stuff, and I was the same. And so to see her latch on and start off at General Hospital as a recurring character and really kind of snowball into something great there has been wonderful to see. And she hasn't taken any of that for granted. And because what we're talking about with the tweeting or whatever, she cares, and she
mm-hmm.
cares about her career. She cares about what she's doing in her job. She has a lot of integrity, and she just loves what she's doing. She loves. We talk about her addiction to show business. It's like, you know, you get to a point where you haven't worked in a while, and you're like, screw it, I'm not going to do it. It doesn't mean anything to me. And then the jobs come through, and it's like, yes, you know, it all means everything. It's wonderful. And when you get the opportunities to work, you give it your all. And it's a perfect fit for her there at General Hospital. And I know she's always been a fan of that show, too. So it's
mm-hmm.
a poetic kind of job for her. But she told me about the tweeting thing. She took a picture. She said, now I'm going to tweet this. You just so you know, it's going to go to 10,000 some odd people. I'm like, you're kidding me. She goes,
yeah.
With the times, man. So that's really how I understood the power of the tweet.
Well,
it's great for soap actors, you know.
I just tweeted her, and I just told her that I was doing an interview with you, and you said hello. So you'll probably hear from her.
Excellent.
You just want to interview with Stardish? Because now it's out. I just put that. You said hello. So, yes, it's out there. But she wasn't always into it either. So she definitely got more into it.
Oh, yeah.
Because the last time she was on the show, she wasn't that good about keeping up with it. But now she's, like, on there all the time. So definitely. Definitely a Twitter queen. Oh, yeah. It's addictive. It really is. I never was into it. Yeah, I wasn't really into it, and I mean, I still don't do it on my phone or anything like that. I'll do it if I'm in front of my computer. There's like a console called TweetDeck that kind of keeps you updated on people that you follow, and once in a while I'll go through it. It's not an everyday thing, usually only when I do a show and I'm promoting it, I really get on it, but for actors that want to stay in touch with their fans and know thoughts or whatever, it's good. It's definitely a good tool.
Part of it for me is I don't trust my instincts. At times, it's like I know at some point I'm going to say something really freaking stupid, and maybe after a couple of beers, and so maybe I'm restraining myself by not being able to have a pulpit of some kind.
I can tell you that I've seen several things on Twitter, and even on this show, with actors coming and voicing their opinions. Scott Clifton is one of them. He's a very vocal guy, and definitely got the potty mouth going, and we just love that. So we had like a F-bomb contest who could drop it more in the show. Yeah,
so
we did. And
the FCC is not overseeing this operation.
Oh, no. This is the Internet. You can say whatever you want. There's no rules or regulations on this show. So Scott and I had like a little F-bomb contest on his last appearance when we talked about his letting go, being let go from One Life to Live.
Refresh my memory. I'm terrible. I'm sorry.
Scott Clifton played... you probably wouldn't have worked with him, I don't think. Scott Clifton played Skylar Joplin. He was kind of embroiled in the Rex and Gigi storyline.
Yeah. Now, that was a kid that worked behind the bar?
Yes.
Okay.
No. Yeah. Did he work at the bar? Yes, he did. And
he
originally came from General Hospital.
Did he have a little bit of a goatee kind of?
Yes.
But he's a good actor. I was there when he was there. Yeah, I mean, I heard they let all those kids go.
They did. Brett Claywell and Scott Evans and
yeah.
the two that were playing the gay storyline.
Yeah.
That one of them actually found out they were let go via Twitter.
That's
how they found out they lost their job. Yeah.
Well,
I
ran into Scott about a month before that happened, and I can tell you he didn't see it coming, and I certainly wouldn't have seen it coming. That story seemed to be, and I know what like One Life was going for. It's like if we're gonna find an audience, we're gonna find like a gay audience, you know.
I
understand the reasoning behind that, and it seemed like they had it, but apparently, from what I heard, you find one audience and you need to lose another. And once they realize they lost a certain amount of viewers from that, unfortunately, that was that. I mean.
Yeah, that was the end of it.
You know, and everybody kind of that was somewhat involved in it. So it's I'm not sure. I haven't watched the show since I left, and I think they've returned. They have a few of the older characters back on. You know, some of the Buchanans and stuff like that. So maybe they're, I don't know, trying to revive the older audience. But I think that's the mistake soap operas have made over the years is alienating their veteran viewers, you know.
Exactly,
going
yeah.
after these what they think are going to, you know, bring in the young viewers is just, you know, you're turning off the old people, and the older people are what bring in. I started watching soaps because of my grandma.
Exactly.
And if grandmas aren't out there watching anymore, they're not turning on their grandchildren. And that's really, in essence, what's happening. It's part of what's happening.
Oh, yeah. No, I agree with you 100% on that one. But I don't know. I could sit here and talk to you all night, really. But we're do you have a minute to take a phone call before I let you go?
Absolutely. Sure.
Okay. I'm going to bring on Tony from Chicago. Tony, say hi to Michael.
Hey, Michael, how you doing?
Hey, Tony, how are you?
I'm doing good. Hey, listen, I got the chance to walk with you on Ross. Well, I love Ross, so here too, and especially with the dynamics that you worked with Cassie, Kabayla, as Blair, and Florencia, as Taya. Is there any difference between working their acting styles and the dynamics between the characters?
Absolutely, and that was one of the great things about working on that show is I felt like, although I was two different characters, I was this kind of suave guy and then a psycho. But whenever I worked with them, I was really two different characters. And, you know, and Cassie had a very funny, southern, casual, humorous, funny style that really touched my kind of my funny improvisational style, and that was always fantastic. And so I started with her, and then when I got to Landview, I started working with Florencia more, and hers was she gets right in your face, and basically, you know, smolders, and even though whatever she's saying, she you feel like she wants to have sex with you, and in a good way. I mean, it's like she grabs you in a whole different way, and two different actresses. Again, I've been blessed with the actresses I work with that are all brilliant, and so it was fun because, you know, one day if I was working with Cassie, I knew I was going to be this character. If I was working with Florencia, I had to show up as this character, and so I felt kind of like I had two different jobs. So working with total pros, it was, like I said, it was wonderful. I wish I could have done it longer.
Yeah, I wish you'd done longer. Yeah, I wish you'd done it too. But and also talking about, you know, women, we're talking about this. Also, the young lady who plays your daughter Danielle,
right,
Kelly Nimsdahl.
Yeah,
she recently did the musical, the StarCross Plus musical. She sang and danced recently. Did you have a chance to look at that?
I heard but did not see. I heard that they did something, and I think that's something they do once every so often. But
they do.
Yeah, and I didn't. And again, another regret is I couldn't work longer with Kelly, because she started as my daughter and or, you know, what I thought was my daughter, and really immediately blossomed into a wonderful actress. I really felt a fatherly connection to, you know, and she's such a sweet girl and a really solid young actress. Because they asked her to do a lot, just throwing her into the show to really, you know, go into that story like that was a lot to ask a young girl, and she performed ably.
Yeah, she has really blossomed indeed. Now she's involved in a major storyline now, major triangle now, with Matthew and with Nate.
Uh-huh.
Now on the show, yeah.
Matthew, no. So Matthew's walking again. I'm sorry, I haven't been watching that.
Yeah,
Okay.
Yeah, he's walking again. Yeah.
And who's Nate?
Nate is some new character.
Okay.
Played by Lenny Platt.
A teenager.
He's played by Lenny Platt.
Is the story with Todd? How are they divvying up that story? Like, is she more embroiled in this kind of love triangle, or is the father issue thing still there?
Well, it's
the father issue is still there. Yeah, but the father issue is still there because they just finished doing this whole High School Musical takeoff, where it was called Star-Crossed Lovers, and it was written by Langston, and it was a story about Star and Cole. Now, Daniela played Star in the actual musical, so she got to witness firsthand the way Todd treated Star during the courtship of Star and Cole, which was horrific. So that just turned her off even more. So she hates him now more than ever, I think.
Wow. Well, at some point they're going to, obviously they're setting that up to have some, like, you know, they're going to turn that around for her at some point, but who knows?
Yeah, well, we'll see. We can always hope for Ross to come back and try and claim his daddy rights.
Well, you know, in the meantime,
he's
down in Tahiti, you know, just being a bum. So that's not the
thing. That's all right. You know, beach bumming it around. I'm sure you'll find something to do.
Beach bumming with every girl on the point.
That's right. I'll find some checks to forge.
Right. Well, thank you, Tony.
Thanks,
it's
Tony.
My pleasure. And Mike, thanks, all the best to you. And Joanne, I'll talk to you after summer vacation.
All right. Thanks,
Tony.
Okay, bye-bye.
If you were stranded in Tahiti on the island, what would you have to have, Michael?
I would have to have the ingredients for a pina colada on hand. I would have to have jet ski. I would have to have 50 SPF sunscreen because I'm Irish and I burn horribly.
Mm-hmm.
And let's see, that would, you know, well, of course, a bevy of young Polynesian women. Outside of that, I'd be fine, really. What more do you want?
Oh, okay. Well, of course, you have to.
You know,
you can't forget about them.
No,
what would it
no,
be
and
on a stranded island?
That's right, and some beer as well. I need some Polynesian beer. I'm not sure.
And
what
some
beer.
Birth control. We don't want any babies coming out of Tahiti.
Yeah.
I don't think the
soaps
need any more babies.
Now you're getting into, kind of the technicality of things. So I don't want to put too many limitations on it.
Oh, my God. Well, listen, I can't tell you that it's just been fabulous talking with you. And, yes,
absolutely.
I could sit here all night. And I am going to have you come back intermediately. And we're just going to chit-chat about nothing as far as
absolutely.
I'm concerned.
I'd love to talk, and I love being on the show. I really appreciate it. I'm glad we met the other night.
Well, we will definitely pick a subject and
have
you come on back once my relocation is settled.
What relocation?
I am moving to Florida from Western New York. I live up in Buffalo.
Okay.
So,
really?
Yeah. I'm heading down. We'll be out of here by the end of June. So, yeah.
Where are you going in Florida?
Oh, Fort Lauderdale.
Excellent.
Mm-hmm.
I am a big fan. I'm a big fan of Fort Lauderdale by the sea. I spent a weekend, Super Bowl weekend there this year with some folks, Ken Shriners down there, and I had a great time.
Yes. Well, I lived there for about 13 years
prior to
moving here. So, yeah, I am familiar with it. I just kind of I'm originally from New York, but I just kind of got on this stick where I couldn't stand it anymore because, when you just go through something in your life and you're in one state for so long, you feel confined, and that's how I felt. I went through tons of cancer treatments in Florida. So once I got the all clear, I was like, oh, God, I got to get the hell out of this state and get back to New York. I just said, it's further than where I'm from, but it's time to go back. Western New York.
You feel you're able to get back there.
Yeah. My parents live down there. I got a ton of family down there, so it's like moving back home now, I guess, after a couple years off. So I'm like a nomad. I can't stay put. It's terrible for my children. But what? I just tell them think of yourselves as army brats, except I'm not in the army.
And that will give them a good dose of wanderlust for their adult lives. It's always good to travel.
Exactly. I completely agree with you. Well, before I let you go, can I get you to do a little promo for Stardish? Like, hi, this is Michael Lowry on Stardish Radio.
Sure.
Say however you want to say it, and I'm recording now, so whenever you're ready.
Hi, this is Michael Lowry on the wonderful and informative Stardish Radio.
Perfect. Chat room is saying thank you and hope that you get back to where Mike's live soon. And we'll definitely stay in touch. Everyone
Please
else,
do.
I'll talk to you at the end of August, beginning of September. Keep checking the website for the guest lineup for that time. Until then, everybody enjoy your summer. Have a safe Memorial Day weekend. And remember what it's all about. Support your troops.
Hey, everybody, this is Bob Guinea, and you're listening to Stardish Radio. Let's dish, baby!